Accession number 20482, Reel 4.
And Reel 4.
He came back to command and he played football, although he didn't play in goal anymore, because I think he was a bit worried about getting a bump on his chest. But after we'd done the work that we had to do in Kowloon, we were moved up further into the new territories to a place called Castle Peak. And very shortly after moving to Castle Peak, my number came up to be able to go home to be demobilised. And so really, I was a bit bomb happy by the time we got to Castle Peak, so I don't remember an awful lot about what was going on in Castle Peak, but the commander did stay there for some time, during which time, of course, all people whose demob numbers came up began to go away. And one of the ways that was found very effective for moving people home for demobilisation was the use of aircraft carriers. And the hangar deck was fitted with three-tier bunks, and the flight deck became a wonderful exercise area. And I went home with quite a lot of Marines from the commando and 42 commando and some officers from other commandos in an aircraft carrier called the Raja. She was one of these merchant ship conversions into aircraft carrier. And I think the Americans had done the conversion because she had a wooden deck, which our Navy's aircraft carriers were metal, which offered them better protection. And this is one of the reasons why I think they did better in the Pacific in many ways, had fewer fires. Anyway, we went home in the Raja, and we went from Hong Kong to Plymouth without any stopping, and this took us 28 days. And I think one of the problems we had was people had been in the tropics taking Mepocrine, and although we continued with our Mepocrine, when we got into the colder weather after Gibraltar, a chap started going down with jaundice. And I don't know whether this was due to Mepocrine or the fact they'd been in the tropics or what, but quite a lot of people got jaundice. Otherwise, it was a fairly uneventful voyage, and we used to play a lot of deck hockey on the flight deck of this aircraft carrier. And when we got to Plymouth, we were whipped off to go on leave straight away by train. And of course, this was a bit unusual, to get in an English train instead of all these things we'd been used to in India. And so I went on leave, and I went on leave, I think, for a fortnight. And then I came back and reported to Eastney, Portsmouth Royal Marine Barracks, to be demobilised. I spent one night in the mess, and the next day I was taken up to Cosham, where there was a demob depot, and one was asked to make one's choice as to whether you wanted a civvy suit or a pair of trousers and a sports jacket. I think I opted for the latter. And then you were packed off with all your documentation, and that was the end of your service, very quick and very sudden.
Were you really bomb happy in Hong Kong?
Well, when you say bomb happy, I mean one was getting ready to go and finish with the war and get home and sort oneself out. I had made application when we were in Hong Kong to enter the colonial service, and I waited with sort of fear and trepidation, as it were, to find out if I get any news, but it was quite a while before I got any news.
I think you served in Malaya during the Malayan emergency as an administrator.
Well, yes. Let me just tell you very quickly what happened. I eventually was accepted for the Colonial Customs Service, which is the service that I'd applied for. And just before I was going to go to my first territory, which was Nigeria in West Africa, I was told I had to go on a 3-month attachment to Her Majesty's Customs in the United Kingdom. So I did that before I went to Malaya, and I went to Malaya in 1947, arriving in Nigeria in 1947. I served in Nigeria and the Cameroons. I then went on leave. I came back to Lagos. I met my wife, and we subsequently got married when I was transferred again to the Cameroons. So I then served in northern Nigeria, and at that time, we were getting to the stage where we were thinking of going to another territory, and we applied when we were in Kano to go to Malaya on transfer. And to cut a long story short, we were accepted to go to Malaya. We went on leave, and then we went to Malaya, leaving London, I remember, in January 1953 in a P&O vessel called the Chu San, and allegedly we were going to Singapore. When the ship got to Penang, 21 days later, we were met by one of the customs people in Penang and told that we were disembarked there because we were going to serve in what was then the Federation of Malaya rather than in Singapore. So we were posted to a place called Ipoh, which was the capital of a Malay state called Perak. And the emergency was still going on, but it was coming to a close. Funnily enough, my brother-in-law had served in 3 Commando Brigade, which was in Malaya, and he left in 1952. We were posted from Ipoh to a place called Tiloansen, which is down further down on the Pera River, and I served there for... well, over a year anyway, certainly. And at that time, we used to have to go from Tiloansen in a vehicle convoy if we were going outside the town. But the emergency was dying off at the time. And if you went up to the Cameron Highlands, which was a hill station in the central Malaya, you had to go up in convoy. And because of the funny road, it was up one day and down the next day rather than both ways at the same time. But that was the road rather than the emergency itself.
Did you feel much apprehension at that time?
Not really. We saw a few terrorists being moved about and the odd one being captured, and there were alarms and so on. But it was well under control by then. Templar's idea of providing the villagers with defence in the shape of very large fences and troops and locally trained people, the terrorists were getting a thin end of the wedge by then.
About how long did you serve in Malaya for?
I served in Malaya from 1953 until after it became independence in 1958.
You were also telling me earlier about the Africans who'd served in Burma and how you met them after the war in Cameroons. Do you think that the experience of being soldiers in Asia had changed them much?
Yes, they were not really content to go back to their old village life, because the village life in the Cameroons was a market-dominated life, and markets there were not held on regular days. They were held every 8 days, so that you had to have a plan of all the markets. But in that part of the Cameroons, the women did the trading. They used to go from market to market, and the men really were petty traders, that's all. Nothing very much, and the women did the farming. It was a matriarchal society, no doubt about it. But these men, I think, were, by and large, they were a bit discontented, because they were far better off financially in the service, where they got a regular pay packet coming in compared to being at home. But they were very fine chaps, and my carrier gang were a superb crowd, and I got very, very attached to them during my time in the northern Cameroons. We used to walk for roughly 20 days a month, 5 hours a day. And you're the only white man there. You've got your I used to take two servants with me, a cook and a steward boy, and all the rest were the carrier gangs. And we used to check with about 15 carriers. This included the office and all the rest of it. And we moved from these various customs stations on the frontier between the French and British Cameroons that I used to have to look after. And the majority of the preventive officers in these camps had been either policemen or in the service during the war.
You said they were discontented. In what way did their discontent become apparent to you?
They always wanted to be able to get into some form of paid employment. There was a great move to get from the carrier gang to become preventive officers, where they got provided with a house and a uniform and so on. You can understand that during the service experience, they had quite a lot of money. They were young men. Then suddenly all that was shut off and they were sent back to their own small villages. But I liked them very much, and I found with most African people, the less education they had, the nicer they were.
How do you mean?
Well, people who went to school, Nigerians who went to school and obtained at least some education, seemed to lose the natural behavior, kindness to other people, hospitality surrounding their homes, that was so much more apparent with the less educated West Africans.
You said that the women were traders, but the men were petty traders. Yeah. What's the difference?
The women used to trade the produce of the land. So they would take their cocoa, yams and whatever, and corn and so on to market to sell. The men petty traders used to trade in second-hand manufactured goods, if you like. Mm-hmm. They would have picked up things in the market like cups and spoons and forks and things of this sort, and odd bits of textile. And they would go, if they were successful in their trading, they would tend to go and buy from the established stores like the United Africa Company and John Holt and so on, and trade in the markets with those goods. But because of the nature of the terrain, you could only take what you could carry on your head.
Which years were you in Cameroons?
I first went to the Cameroons in 1947, and the first tour I did there, I left in 1949. And then we went back to the south of the Cameroons, on the coast, and I was in fact married in Victoria, in the Cameroons, and served in Victoria, which was a different form of customs activity altogether. This was the export of bananas and palm products and so on. An interesting life I had, really.
Where else as a customs officer did you serve apart from Nigeria, Cameroons and Malaya?
That's all. Well, I did this training in the United Kingdom Customs, which I found quite interesting. But then when Malaya became independent, that was the end of it. I went to Australia then.
How do you feel now about having served with the Marines in Burma?
Well, I think we all had to serve anyway during the war. My own brother was a regular Royal Marine for 27 years. My wife's brother was a regular Marine officer for 30 years. So I've always had that contact with the Corps. We've maintained our reunion of 44 Commando. Well, I've kept in touch with many of the people I served with. And I'm pleased that I served in the Royal Marines and not in some other service, because it was a very small and very friendly, elite sort of service.
And you didn't get wounded?
No. Only that little bit through the top of my belly, which could have been my end.